In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You have found the Shanty Pants Show. Hello, it's Shanny, the least influential influencer that there ever was. With a heart full of laughter and a journey that runs deeper than the trendiest makeup You may know me from my ridiculously comedic fashion and makeup tutorials on social media, but guess what? There's so much more to the story. I was born, raised, and married in a cult. When I left the cult at 31 years old, I had no knowledge about real life or how to process what I had been through. I felt very alone. The past couple of years, I've been on an incredible journey of learning, growing, and recovering, and I'm excited to share this with you. I'll bring you stories from the Cultiverse, where many cult survivors and experts share their knowledge and experiences. Their stories are more than inspiring. They're a roadmap to self-discovery and resilience. So get ready for a podcast that's part comedy, part wisdom, and a whole lot of heart. If you feel alone in your journey, my hope is that that will change once you hear these stories. Welcome to the Shanty Pants Show.
Thank you so much for coming on my show. I'm very excited to have you. And why don't you just do a little brief introduction of yourself for the audience?
Hi, everybody. This is Pony Jean Parker. I am the author of Hoax. It's my memoir that I came out with in January. I was actually born and raised a Jehovah's Witness. So it is my story through being in that for 30 years. I left when I was 30. So yeah, that's pretty much, I feel like that sums up a lot.
I would just love to hear kind of your story and what you would like to share with us about that. And then if I have questions as we go, I will be asking
Perfect.
Them and you can answer them or not, up to you.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay.
So I was born and raised into the Jehovah's Witness religion. I am a fourth generation. I'm ex-Jehovah's Witness, but fourth generation. I was in it for 30 years. I left... after kind of, I would say from early 20s until 30s is where I kind of was like stepping in and out and back and forth in it, because I had already been questioning for a long time some of the doctrines and things that I didn't agree with, that I didn't understand, all that stuff that most of us go through upon an exit. But when I decided to leave, my entire family disowned me and had my children legally taken from me. So I lost both of my children. And, you know, losing everybody you've ever known in your life at the same time on the same day really does a number on you mentally. So then that kind of, I already was dealing with what I didn't know at the time, with alcoholism. So it really... just elevated that to the most extreme once this happened, where I lost everybody. So then I was in active addiction for probably like 7 years, I think. So dealing with that, dealing with mental health issues stemming from the trauma of everything that I went through, being raised in this cult, plus everything I endured with my exit and losing my family, and you know, multiple suicide attempts, things of that nature, and ended up in a mental health hospital and rehab, all that fun stuff that comes along with something like this. And so, yeah, it's basically that story, because in a couple of years back, probably like 5 years ago, and I started realizing the presence of an XJW community on Facebook was where I found kind of like the dominance of it at first. I first realized how not alone I was, and you know, going through something like this is so isolating, and you just feel like it's the only, you're the only person that's ever happened to you, and no one's going to understand all that stuff. And coming into writing this story, the purpose was to give people a piece of, you know, my story so they can relate to kind of bridge that gap of the loneliness and kind of isolation, so they can understand that there's so many of us out there, unfortunately and fortunately, that have been through this. So they really aren't alone. And it's not a learn from me, do what I did. It's this is what I did. Take a piece of it, take parts of it that you relate to, and hopefully it comforts you in some way.
I think it's so important and valuable for people like you to write your stories for others to read. I know it's the reason I started the podcast, mm-hmm. is I was realizing as I was speaking out on social media, and not just about how I was raised, but different situations and experiences that I had had in life, I was getting an influx of people messaging me saying, oh my God, thank you so much for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really even realize what I was doing. You know, I was just sharing part of my story. Totally. And so I do think, it's so valuable for people to hear other stories. And we all, I think, can connect in different ways. And so even when we think, oh, our story's boring, or it's not that bad, or it's, you know, it's okay, it's still worth sharing. It's always worth sharing, because it's going to connect to someone. So I'm really excited to read your book and to kind of just see more about or read more about your experience. But why don't we go back a little bit to kind of what your childhood was like, as far as living your rules and, you know, all that good fun stuff that all you that get to just be born stuff. Right into.
You know, for... And this is something that I struggled with a lot and through lots of recovery therapy, have come to the realization that I can say and believe is, you know, there was a lot about my childhood that was good. And I had mm-hmm. fun memories. And, you know, it's not, I think that's hard for people in similar situations like this as well. It's because the overall of it was so damaging. You think that you can't ever look back fondly on anything that you had, but mm-hmm. I did have some normalcy in my life and good times. And I was very close with my family and extended family. And it's like all my cousins I was with all the time. They were almost like siblings. So like all that fun stuff. Right. But definitely. I think the thing that's, stands out to me the most in childhood as far as I don't want to say damaging, but just real hard like that is the idea of the indoctrination of Jehovah's Witnesses that like if you don't obey God and do what Jehovah wants and all that stuff, that you're gonna die, and the end of this is mm-hmm. things in Armageddon, right? So now you're like in grade school and you can't be friends with any of your friends you're in school with, because we're not allowed to be friends with anybody who's not a witness. And I grew up in congregations that all the kids were either a couple of years older or a couple of years younger. So I was always like this weird middle kid that didn't really have a friend group. But then like going to school and making friends and wanting to have friendships with them and knowing I can't because I'm taught that they're actually evil and God's going to kill them. And I just, that thought alone of realizing that that's the idea that's being put in children's heads within this cult is like terrifying. And to think that I grasped that as like a 7-year-old and thought that was completely normal is not something 7-year-olds should have to think about or worry about, you know?
Right.
It's just not.
Yes.
You know, and then, and along with that, like most other people in similar situations, there was a difference of, you know, we don't celebrate holidays. So like, I didn't participate in any of the stuff in class. So there's always some part of every day. The Pledge of Allegiance was still a huge thing in school because this was 1,000 years ago when I was younger. So, you know, you don't do the Pledge of Allegiance and then you don't do any of the holiday things. You don't do the front, someone has a birthday and then the family brings cake or cupcakes because the kid's birthday. We can't eat any of it. We can't do Valentine's candy, like all that stuff. So like you're constantly being kind of singled out as like just this, the weird different kid, right? So, I mean, not ideal as a kid growing up. We all go through stuff as kids though, so I understand that. But a lot of that where I think I realized from a younger age too that things weren't adding up. It didn't make sense to me. And I feel like that, I don't know that that's really a narrative that I should have been aware of either at my age. Do you know what I mean? Like you're forced into such adult ideology and thinking as a child. I don't know that that's really the best idea.
Right. Well, and then there's no one, I mean, cause it's basically the same as how I was raised, but there's no, because I felt the same way from a very young age, like questioning things, wondering about things, but there was no outlet or way to talk to anyone about that. So me, you know, you just internalized it as I shouldn't be having these thoughts or whatever it might be. So yeah, again, it puts a lot on the shoulders of a young child to even have, like you said, even to have those thoughts.
Yeah, I used to pray to God that he would make me normal and he would make me believe because I didn't. So I immediately assumed there was something wrong with me and I was defective and I was broken and I was just upset, you know, and like I just was devastated at the fact that I couldn't do what everyone else seemingly was doing because who really knows how everyone else felt really now that I look back on it, you know what I mean? So, but I just was like, I'm broken. I'm defective or something wrong with me because I don't believe it. I'm not buying it. I don't like God's going to kill me because it's drilled into you that he can see all your every single thought. So now I'm just like, and then there's the whole no privacy thing, right? No privacy, but also there's no one I can talk to. So it's like, that's such a weird like combination of things. That's just so entirely confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're never getting those questions answered. Right. So it, you know, like you said, you're 30. I got out when I was 31 and, for that many years, these thoughts and feelings and questions are all compiling and never having anywhere to go or never being processed, I think is how I look at it now. And so it's like in my 40s now, I'm starting to process and figure out, you know, deconstruct it all. So it's a lot to, I mean, for any amount of time, it's a lot, but when you're in it and it's just all, you know, it's a lot to unpack for sure.
Absolutely. I had a friend who explained me one time is that, you know, I think often in these situations too, when you leave, you're met with well, it's over. So what it be, but it's over now. So you should be over it kind of mentality from outsiders. Right. And one of my friends explained once, and I knew where she meant by this, and she wasn't meaning it in an immaturity way or like a mean way, but it's like, I think at that point I had been out like 6 years. So she was like, she's literally like a 6-year-old. And in a lot of ways I was, because I had to really, first thing you have to figure out, who am I? Because I was told who to be for 30 years. And I was told how to act and who to be and what to do and what to think and what was right and what was wrong. So I didn't really have the ability to think in that way of self-discovery and figuring out for myself how I felt, right? So that's like a challenge part of it too, along with what you were saying, is like, now that we're out, it's like, now it starts. It's not just over because we got out.
Right. It's kind of like, yeah. And I've been faced with the same type of comments. And I think I look at others, friends of mine that have gotten out as well, and who, and from what I can see, have taken kind of that mentality of like, oh, we're out. Now we get to choose what we want to do with life, but they never process and actually recover. Mm-hmm. It's more of just a, oh, we're out and life goes on. So, and it doesn't mean that they're not living great, free lives now, but you wonder what those undercurrents are like. And I think there's so many of our past, not even beliefs necessarily, but just what you're accustomed to being, like what you're accustomed to being told and everything. It's so deep within you that it's very easy to just, oh, I'm in a different building now. I'm in a different location now. I'm fine. And never deal with those feelings. So it is, you know, it's great that you're out, but there's a lot to unpack. And I mean, and I didn't for years. I ignored it. And kind of, like you said, you're like a young child, because I didn't know anything about myself. And I mean, I'm still learning, being out, you know, I don't know, like 12 years now. And it is scary, because you've always been told what to do, how to do it, everything. And then all of a sudden you're out on your own and you're just like, oh, but that's bad. And that's bad. And it's kind of terrifying to not know what's real and what's not. And it's a lot. It's a lot. And I really kind of lived that way, you know, until the last probably 3 years of realizing like, okay, there's a lot of deep stuff here that needs to be processed and has never been processed. And now I'm doing it. So it's never too late, but I do, you never, can kind of get in that mindset of like, why aren't you fine? You've been out for so long. Why are you talking about it now? Why are you so, you know, why is your podcast about this? Like, move on. And it's like, well, it's never, healing's never over. We're always going to be dealing with it. And so it's okay to talk about it. And it sure feels good to talk with other people with similar situations and realize, hey, we're not alone. So it is, it's been great. But with you, so did you have siblings?
I do have siblings. I have three older siblings. So I'm the youngest of four.
Okay.
So I was the baby.
Wow.
But I was always the rebel. I was always Dean. Because it's kind of going, I don't think if anybody has any glimpse into me and who I am, no one is surprised by that at all. But I was always kind of the one who would try to question things and push envelopes and like do all that stuff, right? So yeah, another part of it too, and I didn't mention this in my book, because it's like, it took me 2 years to write this book, but I can't remember every single thing that ever happened. But like looking back on it, and just that question you asked, like, triggered this memory, is my dad had a sister who left in her 20s, left the cult in her 20s. And we didn't talk to her as a family. She was out there in the world, and everything I ever heard about her was so negative because she was worldly, you know. And from when I was little, from as far as I can remember, my mom and dad always used to say to me at times that I reminded them of her all the time.
Oh my gosh.
And at the time I was like, that's not great.
She's terrible. She's cool. Lovely.
And I'm like, what? And I remember that I just literally regained that memory and you asking that question. So like, yeah, I had that too, where it was like, I was constantly being reminded by parental figures that I was mimicking in their eyes a worldly person who had left, which is anybody who knows any familiarity with the JW, you know, how they operate is like, that's like your Satan's daughter at that point. Right. So Mm. As a child, my parents were like, you remind us of Satan's daughter. And I was like, cool. I love that for myself.
This is helping. This is really helping out my situation.
Yeah, this is wonderful.
Oh my gosh. I really can't wait to read your book because I wish that part was in it. I feel like our stories are the same because my dad had a sister who was marked. We call it marked to be avoided. Mm-hmm. And so her and her family were marked when I was like probably around 7.
Okay.
And same, everyone's like, you're just like your Aunt Christy. Right. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm like, I don't even know her really anymore, but I thought she was terrible. Right. Like she's not with us. She's in the world.
Right. I was like, cool.
So that's so hilarious. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great memory. I'm glad that we were able to bring that one to the surface.
Yeah, exactly. I won't cry about it or have nightmares later. It's okay.
Okay. I'll let you do that later. Yeah.
Right. Oh.
Oh,
funny.
Oh my gosh, that's so great. Oh, so as far as like obviously the rules, how did you guys dress? Were you able to dress pretty normally like the world?
So we were not to dress as if we were of the world. So everything in modesty. So the skirts could not be any more than 2 fingers over your knee. So you could put 2 fingers at the top of your kneecap and your skirt had to be that length or longer, or you would, most of the time it was an elder would come talk to your parents and reprimand them in a way of like, you need to guide your child better kind of reprimanding. Mm. Yeah. Everything had to be decent. So like I couldn't wear spaghetti straps on anything. Like I grew up in the 90s. So there was a lot of spaghetti strap dresses, baby doll dresses, like stuff like that. So we had to wear, sweaters and everything. Basically everything in modesty. And like, I remember a big thing, which is kind of funny now because I don't have like an overage of it, but I do like it. And I have pieces with it. There was no camouflage, anything allowed, period.
Oh.
Because it mimicked, like the military and that. They're very against
interesting
anything political and military because that's of the world. So we couldn't wear anything camouflage because that was affiliated with that. Oh, wow. I do remember that.
Okay.
Yeah. So random. That I also could eat Lucky so Charms cereals because that was magic. So there's that.
Oh it's my kind of gosh.
Sometimes, like, and especially when you go. When you go into these like XJW groups and like we all throw stuff in there of like wild memories. Like I couldn't eat Lucky Charms because it was magic, but we owned the entire Disney library. So like make it make sense, first of all.
Yeah, that does really make sense. That really, really
right.
Draws everything together perfectly.
Adds to the confusion of on top of everything that we're taught and indoctrination of like this, that, and the other. But then there was like little exceptions.
Mm.
No one ever talked about why they were an exception,
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
Right. You just want to go ahead and enjoy that or it will get taken away too.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I grew up in the 90s too. And I remember the spaghetti strap situation and so many pictures of me with the t-shirt on under the spaghetti strap dresses because we still wanted to wear them, of course. Yes. And so it was quite a look indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I feel like we are very stylish. Yeah. We definitely kept up with those stylish trends. I remember.
We did.
I remember I had a like acid washy denim skirt at one point. And of course, to the ground almost and nice and full and ugly. But I just remember thinking it was so cool because it was acid washed. And I think it got taken away but it was fun for a bit.
That was like your little piece of rebellion.
Oh yeah. For that moment. Yeah, we got our dad in trouble a lot, that's for sure. Yeah.
Same.
We used to joke that our file cabinet at the leader's office, home office, was very deep. We're like, our name is very deep, Dad. You are welcome. You are welcome.
I feel like that was me too, because I constantly was like pushing boundaries and asking questions probably when I shouldn't have been. So I definitely had a, even for, I was definitely the girl in the congregation that was like, the other families were like, be careful about being friends with that, that one of the, of the children in the family.
And now you can wear that with, you know, it's a badge of honor now.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So you grew up in this, obviously. You got out in your 30s, or when you were 30, when do you feel like it really started to fall apart for you, where you obviously, you said as a child, even you were questioning, but when did you really start seeing things that you were having, you know, thought more thoughts about, this isn't for me? You were married in it too. Yeah.
I was married twice in it.
Oh, so my God.
I got married just like every other Jehovah's Witness that was born and raised. Like, you get married at 18 and you start having kids. So I got married 2 months after I turned 18 and had two children with my first husband. And we were married for about 4 years before we got divorced.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Divorced, and then I remarried again, I think 3 years later, and we were married for just a little over a year, and then we got divorced. But within that second divorce, I will say is probably kind of where it's the ball started rolling. I the marriage never would have lasted because I was never meant to continue to be in that religion. So no matter how it unfolded, it was never going to work, right? But I know I wasn't blameless. He wasn't blameless, but I know my part in it was I was a miserable person because I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to attribute anything positive to a marriage, right? So so we end up getting divorced. I lost my job. I was in banking at the time, and that was back in 2009 whenever all the banks were buying each other and all that stuff went down. So then I was able to go back to school. I had not done anything past high school because that's also something that's frowned upon in the Jehovah's Witness community, is any secular education.
Mm-hmm.
But I had the opportunity to go back to school. I went back to school for cosmetology to do hair. I've always wanted to do hair. That's kind of where that turning point really started happening for me, because I was homeschooled from 6th to 12th grade. And then, my only friends were within the congregation, so only ever around other Jehovah's Witnesses, other than worldly people that I was working with, you know, but I'd always been ingrained I can't be friends with them, so that was never a thing. But being able to go through that experience of finally being able to do what I wanted and being able to be around other people who are also on this journey and doing things to better themselves and get to a goal of something they've always wished for. It was really started comforting me to allow me to push further and further to start really trying to be that person instead of be in. So like the 2 years that I was in school, because I did it part-time, was a little exhausting because I basically led a double life for 2 years. I didn't want to lose my family. I didn't want anyone to know. So I was one way in front of my family and everyone. And then when I was at school or in my free time, because I was an adult living on my own with my kids and stuff, I had worldly friends and was seemingly would have no idea I was Jehovah's Witness. So that's kind of what started giving me the courage to be like, no, I think this is what we need to do. And I think in the back of my mind at the time, I thought I could just do that forever and just be two people. Mm. Right.
Yeah.
But obviously that's extremely unrealistic. And then after some time and I finally graduated and got licensed and I started doing hair, once I actually started actively doing hair in a salon and had all these beautiful experiences, I was very lucky in my career initially. And, the happiness and joy I felt from being myself, and I was developing friendships with other people who valued me for who I was. Mm. And I didn't have to pretend, and I could just literally be me. I think sometimes it's so funny, like people have this idea that people who are in high control religion and cults, have this idea that when you leave, you're evil. Like, we're just going to go out and start murdering people left and right.
Right.
And,
right.
It's a slippery slope. Stealing and doing all this. And it's like, no, I literally just want to hang out with my friends or maybe like have my boyfriend spend the night. And like, that's what I'm doing wrong. Do you know what I mean? Right. So it's like,
yes.
So when I'm saying like being myself, I still wasn't even doing anything quote unquote wrong. I just had friends who weren't witnesses, but that I could actually talk to somebody about how I was feeling, and they didn't judge me and they didn't make me feel like I was a horrible person for how I felt, you know? And that really gave me even more courage I could see that it was out there and it wasn't as the world had always been perceived to me.
Mm.
It was different.
It is. And that's why, you know, I think they like to keep us so controlled and away from all these worldly influences.
Yes.
Because the more we meet other people and have these experiences, the more we are realizing and deconstructing that, oh, that's pretty messed up. And there's a whole real world out here that is not just a bunch of murdery people. And that's awesome. It's so awesome. And I think it is, you know, one of the main reasons they keep us tapped down and away from all the influences. I know when we got out, we met some other, like all churches were bad for us because we were the way. And so everything was bad. Well, I remember we met through my husband's work, this like Christian couple that were like our age. And it's like, we're like, can we be friends with them? And like belief wise, we probably had all the same beliefs, but it was still weird to have, even though like they're more Christian than I was, it was like, oh wait, but they're still bad. Right.
Right.
We do it our way. So it's just so, just so messed up. It's so weird, but it is neat to start having those experiences that can get your brain thinking a different direction. So at that time you were single, raising your two kiddos, and then you went to school and then you started working, and that's when it really started to kind of fall apart for you.
Correct. Yeah. And that's when, not to give too much away, but I showed up to a custody hearing. Me and my children's father every couple of years we divorced when our youngest was 6 months old. So we have been divorced for a very long time. And every couple of years it was like a check-in kind of the court and make sure the custody. So we have 50-50 custody, like all blah, blah, blah. So that's when, I showed up to court. I did not have a lawyer because I didn't need one. Mm. We've done this before. And, my entire family had went to the court and gave statements about how I was an unfit mother. I remember just sitting there listening to the judge reading all these statements from my family talking about how horrible of a person I was. And I literally was just like in the twilight zone, like, what is actually happening right now? And I've never been in trouble, even to this day. I've never been arrested. I've never gotten in trouble for anything. I'm too scared. I'm actually a lot more vanilla than people probably think I am by looking at me. But I said to the judge, you know, they did bring up my drinking in court, but at that time, I mean, I'd never, like I said, never been arrested, never had DUI. I'd always held a job, always had a roof over my kid's head. And in my mind, I was over 21 and I'm allowed to drink alcohol. So I can't really throw that in my face, in my opinion, in that moment.
Right.
So I said this to the judge. I'm like, there's no proof of anything. Never done anything wrong. There's no proof. Like, they were saying I hung out with bad people. Like, you know, the bad people were quote unquote worldly. So they were bad. Right. So, the judge looked at me and said, if everyone is saying this about you, then it must be true. And that was the end of it. That was it.
My. And you lost custody.
And I just sat there crying. And I just knew I was screwed in that moment. But I just was, you know, and it's funny because I was sharing this story the other day. And people ask me all the time, like, why didn't you fight for them? I could have fought for them. And this is something that I fight with myself. Mm. And, you know, in that moment when it happened and losing everybody, my family wanted nothing to do with me at that point. And I believed it. Mm. And I felt I'm not going to fight for them because I don't deserve them because I am horrible.
Oh, my gosh.
So, and then that's where the down spiral into alcohol went, where then I was explaining this story to someone else the other day and they're like, so you literally became the unfit mother. And I was like, I did. Because that was, you know, what was given to me.
Right. That's what they told you were.
And then that's a whole other story. And if anyone's read this book, which everyone should read the book, you should read the book.
Yes.
And that's when I moved to Las Vegas. That's everyone's favorite part of the book.
Oh my God.
Oh, you get to Vegas, just buckle up because it gets real fun. It gets real fun, real fast.
Oh, wow.
There's some stuff in it. Like I promised myself I had to be completely honest or I could not do this. And there's stuff in there that not one other person on this planet ever knew until it's written in this book. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm about to tell the whole world this, but there's some pretty interesting stuff in there. So enjoy Vegas. It's the best part. It's right in the middle.
I can't wait. Oh my gosh. That is so, wow. Okay. And what made you decide to write the book?
So, you know, since leaving and going through everything I went through and then in recovery, long story short, COVID was, and I know this is, I hesitate saying this to a lot of people, but COVID really was the best thing that ever happened to me because it forced me to actually have to face everything and process it and do that because nobody was doing anything.
Right.
What else was I doing? And I know a lot of people kind of went one way or the other at that time, right? And it worked out for me where it ended up helping me immensely reach another level of healing that I had not been at before. I wanted to initially, I've always had this place of wanting to help people, which I know is a trauma response and things from my childhood. I'm a constant people pleaser and I always want to be there for everybody and help everyone and all that stuff. But I do still have that spirit of wanting to make a difference. And near and dear to me is I don't want anyone to ever feel how I felt at times. And I know I can't eradicate that for everybody, but I also, if I can have a part in it, I want to help, you know? And so my whole life since, you know, I left and I made friendships and met people and shared my story, people are always like, you should write a book. You should write a book. And I was like, I don't know how to do that at all. So...
So let's do it.
Well, that's a great idea, but I'll pass. So then I got to the point where, you know, because of the PTSD things I've been through, there's other things outlined in the book that you'll learn that I went through. And my memory is not the greatest. I don't have a great memory anymore. And there's things that I can't remember, short term, long term, whatever. So initially started, I wanted to write the book as a legacy for my kids. I have a relationship with one of my children, and the other one I do not. She's still fully indoctrinated, so we do not have relationships. So part of it was, I want to write the story so like one day they can read it, or, you know, if I forget and I want to know, whatever. So a friend of a friend is a book publisher, and my friend was like, you should call her and get advice on how to write. Cause I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to write a book. Like, that's not something you should casually decide to do one day. So I got on the phone with her for her to just help me like make it make sense. And I ended up on the phone with her for 3 hours, and I told her the whole story because I wanted her to help me figure it out. And then she was like, and I want this book. Like, I want to publish it. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, oh. Immediate, oh my God, now I have to do it.
Right.
So she just said to write with purpose of what you're trying to convey, the overall message. And I always knew, because how I felt, like I just explained that I just want people to know they're not alone and that other people have gone through this, and I want people to relate and feel like it's not just them. And so like I really led with that as really that was the driving force behind this book. And I thought me and all my friends would read it and we would move on with our lives. And we'd have been like, hey, remember that one time you wrote a book? And I'd be like, yeah, that's really cool. And then it was number one on Amazon in 9 categories in pre-sale.
So awesome.
And it just kind of popped off a little bit. So it's been a really cool experience. But yeah, that's touching along with what I mentioned before, the honesty with it, like, the back of the book at the end is photocopies of all my medical records with, you know, my name, birthday, and doctor's names are like blacked out and stuff. But like, that's how brutally honest this story is. Like, I tell you the whole story and then I show you all the documents and lay it all out there for you. Like, I'm not hiding anything.
Wow.
Like, this is it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Terrifying, but cool.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
There's still some times where I like sit here and I'm like, oh my God, why did I write that? Oh.
Now, do you think do you think your parents or family have read it, or would they not even attempt?
I think so. Like, I don't know. I want to say no. Yeah. You know, I'm sure most people already assume this, but we're just going to put it out there. And I talk about it in the book anyways. Like, my legal name is not my birth name. I legally changed my name after I left because I did not want to be associated with my birth name or with my family and their family name. So I don't even know if they know it's me.
Oh.
Or, you know what I mean? So, like, they have no idea I changed my name. They don't know that. So... a little baby part of me has wanted to mail them a copy, but then at the end of the day, that's just me being petty and it doesn't solve anything. So
right.
There's no point, you know?
And you have no contact with them at all then?
No, I don't. I do share an experience in the book of my father during COVID. So I started writing the book and then my father found me. He hired a private investigator to find me.
Oh, wow.
Like, we're just like in a black and white detective show right now.
Really?
But yeah. He hired a private investigator to find me because because of COVID, and curiosity got the best of me. And I got on a phone call with him. We talked for like 20 minutes and it was, I tell the whole story in the book. It's a very interesting experience. But in that moment, I realized it made me, it just made me so appreciative. And I felt so loved and lucky by my chosen family and the people in my life now. It made me appreciate them so much more after talking. Like, I feel like anybody in my situation, you feel like having that moment again, like reconnecting with a parent, you imagine what it might look like or what you might feel or what might happen. And I always pictured all these broken pieces coming back together when I would reconnect with them. But it would make me whole again, and I would feel like how I did before or something. I don't know. I guess that's what you wish for, you hope for, ideally. And then when it happened, I just was like, I don't need you. I don't know you, and I don't need you. And it just reminded me of everything that you did, and it reminded me of all the beautiful people in my life now that would never do what you've done to me. Mm-hmm. And it just, so it did serve a purpose of a closure. It just was in a way I never imagined it would be, it was going to go, you
right.
know?
Right. Wow. Okay. And then now that you're moving forward in your life with all your new experiences and people in your life, what is your life like now? Obviously, you've read the book, which is going to be impact so many different lives. And so I just love that, just that alone. But what are you doing now?
So I still work in the beauty industry. I work in management now. I'm not behind the chair anymore. But I actually work closely with young artists, stylists, and help mentor them and grow their career. And I'm a huge mental health advocate, so I do everything I can with that. And that's really near and dear to me. And I actually found faith after, you know, deconstructing what happened to me. I found a relationship with God. I consider myself a Christian. And I know that's a kind of a one way or the other when you come out of a high control religion as well. But I was able to let go of all the teachings I had and realize that, that's not who God is. Mm-hmm. That's who they taught me God was. So once you let go of that, it kind of opens up a possibility for you to learn a different type of relationship with him, in my opinion. So I found my relationship with God myself, and I have a relationship with my son. I don't talk about it a lot because he's not my story to tell in a sense, you know. But we talk all the time, and it's wonderful and it's beautiful. And, you know, I still have bad days, and I talk about this in the book as well, of the longest time stunted my, healing, because I was in this mindset of, okay, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do therapy, and I'm going to go here and do this, and then I'm healed and then we're done and it's over and it's done. Right. So like, that's not how the newsflash, everyone. Don't, it doesn't work like that. So, I now have so much grace and acceptance for the fact that I might wake up tomorrow and be triggered and be super, super upset and feel like all of the shame dumped back on me. And that's okay.
Yeah.
I deal with it in that moment. It's that day, and it's that day only. And we get up and we move forward. So, yeah, I'm always going to deal with these things. I'm always going to struggle with, you know, my abandonment wounds and, you know, all that stuff. But you can have such a beautiful, amazing life despite those things. So you're not like doomed to be miserable and have this horrible life because of these things that happened to you. Like, that's not, it doesn't need to be like that.
Yeah, there is. There's so much hope and freedom in finding ourselves. And I love that part of your story. I also find it so interesting you talking about your faith in God, because just this last weekend, I was at Story Jam. And so it was an opportunity to be around a lot of people with similar backgrounds, but very diverse group of people. And so it was really a good experience for me. But I too feel like I have found I have a relationship with God now that is so much different than what I was raised in. It's a different God almost, you know, because you, there's so many things about how it was pushed on us or as me as a child, where now, and it's taken years for me to get to this place where I can say I have a relationship with God, but it's so much more impactful and different than it was as a child. It was such a forced, scary, weird. So I love hearing that with other people, because you're right. I feel like it does go one way or another. And I don't judge that on for anyone's experience, whatever direction it goes, because I get it. You know, I get why people turn away. I get why people find something else.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm very thankful for my faith and what I have now. Well, I am so excited about you just like having your freedom and your all your experiences in life now and what you're doing. I love that you advocate for mental health, because I'm huge on that too, mm-hmm. because I think we're all so damaged mentally that we all need the help with mental health. And I think that's something I know as a child or growing up in the cult for so long, we didn't take care of mental health issues at all. We, you know, therapy wasn't right. allowed, nothing on the outside. And yeah. so it's so meaningful now to have the opportunity, like with my kids, even, you know, everyone's in therapy, everyone's doing everything we can do to stay on top of mental health and be aware of it. You know, I think for so long we threw it under the rug as you're fine, you're good, you got this. And now to be more aware of, well, maybe not. And like, I love what you said about like, there's days and then we got to get up mm-hmm. and we got to keep moving. And we have hopefully our support and our systems in place and right. our tools that we can get up the next day and it can be a different day. Again, it's the whole thing of not feeling alone. You know, there's other people out there dealing with very similar things and we got to kind of rally around each other. And I love that you're one of the people doing that. And I just
thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate you so much hanging out and chatting with me today. I can't wait to read your book now. I might just open it to the middle and read that first.
Just find Vegas and go straight there, guys.
Vegas.
And you'll be like, okay, now I got to go back to the beginning. How the hell she got here.
Want to read the Vegas part twice. So
there you go.
Oh my gosh.
So funny.
I can't wait to go get your book now.
So all right, awesome. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this. Very, very easy to talk to and made this whole situation very seamless.
Oh, good. Easy. Well, except for the beginning part when my internet wouldn't work.
That's okay.
Thank you all for joining me for another episode of the Shanty Pants Show. I really appreciate you guys hanging out with me every week. You can find all of my links to all my social medias, anything your heart desires at shantypantsshow.com. You can even find my amazing merch is back up and running there. And you can email me from there, all the things, all the things. Also, you always ask, how can you help me out with this whole podcast situation? You can subscribe to my podcast. You can leave reviews. You can share it with friends. I appreciate it all. So I am super excited to bring you guys the rest of the season. It's going to be amazing. And I'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.